Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your hosts, Rohan Khabib and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. I'm Rohan Khabib, joined today by my good friend, New York Times best-selling author, buyer of lunch, one time American Idol hopeful, Chris Pipes Herring. Herring, how's it going, buddy?
Wow, you just outdo yourself each time. I'm good. How are you? We're actually in the same place for the time being. How are you?
We are. I'm doing well. We're both in Florida, somehow surviving the crazy rain. It rains like this every year, but this flooding is new. I'm sure it's not a sign of the coming climate apocalypse. Chris, so many things on my mind to start this episode. I'll just say it. I don't care. Sometimes I like to keep these things secret. I don't know why, but anyway, I had a chance to speak with Chris Paul earlier this week. He wrote a book. Chris Paul wrote a book. It's a memoir. Yeah. It's about his grandfather. So I'm just doing a short thing on the book. So I'm on the phone with Chris Paul. You know, it's pretty early. It's like 7:30 in the morning on the West Coast. I'm thinking Chris Paul is just going to want to get this interview done right away. You know, it's all business. He's probably doing a million book interviews. Get on the phone. This is Wednesday morning, I guess.
Okay.
And Chris Paul goes, "Man, how about those play-in games last night?" And I was like, I was so caught off guard. I was like, Chris Paul is talking about the playing games with me.
And hey, man, like, yeah. But they've been really good. So I
they
mean, like,
really have. And I think it just goes to show everyone, including the players, are just really excited right now. It was great, you know, very briefly hearing him talk about that Wolves-Lakers game. I told him, I said I was really hoping you guys get the Warriors in round one, and he just laughed. He didn't.
No comment.
No comment. Yeah.
No comment whatsoever.
No comment. So, no, it was cool hearing how excited he was about the playoffs, watching the games, and I think that echoes how we all feel right now. You know, we're recording this on Friday morning. We're mostly going to talk about the playoffs on this podcast. The play-in games tonight, we probably won't get to too much only because, you know, by the time a lot of you listen to this, they might be going on or done, but, man, it's been a fun week. It's been a really fun week.
Totally agree. I mean, it's, you know, and look, I'm going to be critical. It's my job in part to be critical of when the league has missteps, when, you know, the league doesn't handle things properly. We've talked at length about Robert Sarver. I felt like the Josh Primo situation should have been blown up a lot more and talked about a lot more and was kind of swept under the rug. There was the Kyrie thing. it's not to absolve any of that, because you can't do that. I don't think you should do that. But sometimes the league gets stuff right as well. And the play-in game, certainly, the addition of it, you're going to have years where those games are blowouts. And I think for the first couple of years, we did have them where was it 2 years running that Charlotte had like a 40-point blowout loss? And it's just like, what are we doing here? But this year we have the first 10 seed winning a game. And depending on what happens here tonight in Miami, you know, the Bulls could make their way into the playoffs despite being a 10 seed. And aside from that, just the games have been wonderful. You know, they've been 19, 20-point blowouts, and then that team comes back to win. And, you know, shout-out to DeMar DeRozan's daughter swinging a potential playoffs, you know, playoff situation with her screaming.
She may be responsible courtside for the Raptors getting blown up. Like, DeMar DeRozan just sends Nurse to Houston and OG Anunoby to Memphis. Yeah.
You just hear that Justin Timberlake, what goes around, comes back around, you know, refrain. Because, I mean, DeMar, shout out to the Raptors. They won a championship after trading DeMar. It was a controversial decision to some, not to me. I mean, I think it was a pretty clear upgrade. But, you know, obviously there were a lot of feelings involved with that. And a somewhat ruthless move just from the standpoint of how much of a favorite DeMar DeRozan was. But, you know, in some ways, I guess I was going to say that maybe DeMar DeRozan had the last laugh, maybe the last scream, whatever you want to call it. But all that to say, the play-in has been so much fun and so competitive. It does not surprise me at all. Like, I hear what you're saying about a 7:30 in the morning call, but the fact that he was watching the play-in games does not surprise me at all. Because, you know, aside from the fact that these are teams you could end up playing, the games have just been phenomenal so far. So it's, you know, hopefully we get one more night of good games, and we'll see what happens with it.
By the way, speaking of Justin Timberlake, real quick, I just need to tell everyone, because I found this out a little over a week ago now when we got our old NBA crew together for lunch, which is apparently that you, Chris, are a beautiful singer, have a beautiful singing voice. And I don't know how you managed to keep that a secret this whole time. You told me you auditioned for American Idol, and you just dropped it so casually into the conversation, as if it wasn't, as if it wasn't going to be something I've thought about every single day since. Can you at least tell me what song you performed?
I can. I'm going to get canceled for it. well, or not. I've told the story before. Granted, maybe I've said it to Michael on the pod before. Maybe not. I can't remember. It was my first year of college, so this was 2005. I was like a week and a half into college at Michigan, and I drove back home to – either drove or got a ride back home from someone to audition for American Idol. I think it was like season 2 of American Idol, and auditioned at Soldier Field where the Bears play, which now I live – you know, at least my place in Chicago is across the street from
this. Oh, my God.
And there were 15,000 other people that showed up to audition. I auditioned with I Believe I Can Fly and got through the first round of auditions and passed that first round. Then I tried to get cute and was like, all right, well, you know, let me sing all the greatest hits since I'm, you know, I'm making it through the rounds. So then I sang John Legend So High in the second round, and it was not as great and did not make it through. I think you have to make it through the first two rounds to audition in front of like Randy, Simon, and Paula. But it was a fun experience. It was also like a really good indication of no matter how talented you think you are at something or most things, that there's always going to be someone that's better than you or
you could have
that has more talent.
So season two is the Clay Aiken, Ruben Studdard season. You could have taken them, dude.
I do not believe that. I mean, and also, and I know, forgive me, what is the guy's name that is
Daryl Swenson?
Said that he doesn't.
Daryl doesn't. But shout out to Daryl, who's a legend.
Things that are related enough, and he seems like a good sport that we make the joke all the time. Yeah. This is off the rails, but like Ruben Studdard won the show. Clay Aiken seemed to be the bigger star for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Ruben had maybe 2-3 albums and like none of them really hit.
Damn.
And it's crazy to think that you could win a show that was that popular, watched by that many people, I saw something about American Idol last week that had me wanting to watch the show again. Making the rounds on Twitter of this woman that had like this high pitched voice, speaking voice, and it took everything in Lionel Richie and all the other judges not to laugh. And then she started singing and she sounded like Tony Braxton with like this contralto voice. And it's like, what the hell? So I don't know. Reality television, I won't lie, even with the basketball this week, I've caught up on Love is Blind.
There we go.
There's so much good reality TV, toxic reality TV, but American Idol has always been pretty with it. So anyway,
yeah, we'll have to do a whole off-season podcast on how the hold American Idol had on the culture of America in the mid-aughts. We'll save that for the off-season. We'll also maybe have you do a Love is Blind minute at some point during the playoffs. I apologize for anyone who, like, it might sound like I'm wheezing or like on my last dying breath on this podcast today. I'm sure it's very serious and I'm making light of it, but I've just had a cough now. I'm just a guy with a cough. So I apologize in advance. But Chris, without further ado, let's just dive into these playoff series. We know six are locked in. We're waiting for the last two tonight. We could give our thoughts on the one seeds and some of the matchups they may face, but let's run through the series that are locked in. Which one would you like to start with first?
Why don't we go with one that's kind of like medium level? So like, okay. Why don't we go with like Grizzlies Lakers?
Yes. Okay.
Because I don't think it's the most interesting series, but it's up there. It's interesting enough.
I agree. It'll be a fun series. I feel like the Grizzlies, they kind of had a, you know, they're obviously very popular last year too, but they kind of had that flashpoint moment this year with the Lakers, the Shannon Sharp game, etc. Man, was impressed with how the Grizzlies closed this season, but to get Anthony Davis in round one and have no Brandon Clark, no Steven Adams, I'm pretty nervous about them. Especially Brandon Clark was huge for them in the playoffs last year. Like he really, you know, he had a solid regular season. It was weird. It felt like early, you know, in the playoffs last year, he didn't really have a solid spot in the rotation. And he played his way into more minutes during the playoffs. You don't see that a ton. He was so good. I'm really worried about their front court in this series. And if there's one team that is not going to kind of blow the Lakers away from the three-point line, I think it's Memphis, which also doesn't shoot super well. It's not a very, you know, half-court execution, you know, find the open guy to death offense necessarily. Yeah, I guess my initial thoughts in the series are I'm nervous for Memphis. What about you?
I'm not nervous, but I will say that, I mean, it's not the easiest matchup necessarily. Who knows? Maybe the Grizzlies breeze through. I mean, I will also say this, and obviously our member of the team who comes on board thinks that the Lakers will come out of the West. They have not looked very good lately. They kind of got a little bit of a blessing to even win the first play-in game that they, you know, clinched a spot with. They've struggled against the Jazz, who are not even playing, you know, in some cases, like, you know, a full complement of their players a couple of times now to end the season. Can you roll that over and say, like, that's the Laker team you're going to get in this first round? Not necessarily. I mean, I think part of why I lean Grizzlies here, I think pretty strongly, is that they still have a roster of guys that has been used to playing shorthanded for a while, to some extent, even in the playoffs when they've had to. I do think that the point that you raised that has me a little bit leery of wanting to really go all in on them, a team that before all the craziness with their season, I thought would have been the favorite to come out of the West. The three-point shooting is something that I think is worth watching. I think it's a good opportunity for someone like Aldama, Tyus Jones, to really get up some shots. And to try to make sure that deficit doesn't get out of hand. I wonder a little bit about, you know, Anthony Davis and just, does he get completely loose? Is Jaren Jackson, you know, resisting there? What do matchups look like and stuff like that? I also see the potential for John Morant to just go nuts. You know, assuming that he's healthy and kind of oriented and everything for the series, D'Angelo Russell, for how much better he's gotten as a player and how much more mature he seems to have been as a player, still not a great defender and still someone that I think can be exposed in spots. And I think John Morant can probably do plenty of that. So I'm curious. I mean, it's something where I wouldn't hesitate to call this series in five or six. If you're talking about like a full, I'm saying if you had a full complement of the Grizzlies guys, I still think the Grizzlies can and will win this in six, but I wouldn't be surprised if the games are really close in a series like that where the Grizzlies take it.
So these are the Grizzlies. I'm going to give you their top nine guys in minutes per game, mm-hmm. but not including the guys who are out, which are Adams and Clark. So mm-hmm. Morant, Bane, Brooks, Triple J, obvious. I mean, a great four. Then you got Kennard, Tyus Jones, Aldama, Conchar, and Xavier Tillman's going to play a lot. I mean, Xavier Tillman's going to start most likely.
Yes.
Aldama and Conchar, how are we feeling about them? Because I think they're going to have to play serious minutes here. You know, last year this team had Kyle Anderson, who I think made a huge difference for them. I mean, Kennard's a solid player. I don't know that we've seen him get consistent playoff minutes. How do you feel about what's your confidence level in those guys? I mean, they're probably going to play way less minutes. I mean, Memphis does a good job managing minutes. Their leader at Ja, he didn't even play a full 32 per game this year. So I think we'll see their bench guys in the teens, high teens minutes wise, but it's just a lot of unproven players to throw out there for a two seed. What's your confidence level in those guys headed into the playoffs?
Well, I think one of the points that you kind of indirectly are bringing up there is the fact that, and this has come up a lot in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation with JJJ, we're talking about someone that plays like 28 minutes a game.
Yep.
And so when you talk about extending playoff minutes, that's fine. Every team is used to that. Jaren Jackson Jr. is as well. But what his minutes look like, and obviously it's someone that's had foul trouble before, when this is someone that sometimes struggles to stay on the floor, gets a lot of fouls within 30 minutes of play, what happens when you try to extend that to 40? Do you have to go to the bench sooner? Do you have to extend guys that you would prefer not to? You know, I think it would be, if you can, and it's also, the flip side of it is interesting because Anthony Davis is someone that, generally, when he's not playing a lot of minutes, it's because he's been hurt or because he's a risk to get hurt. So right. You could really, really clean up if you're able to extend Anthony Davis's minutes and, you know, essentially put Jaren Jackson Jr. in the post with guys to try to really draw foul trouble. As you're saying, like, you don't love the bench rotation here. If you're the Grizzlies, Kyle Anderson would sound wonderful for a team like this. Now he's been right. Great. For Minnesota, he's been just huge for them. You know, at the same time, if you're talking about Gabriel and Bamba or someone like that, I think the Lakers added yeah. Tristan Thompson and the playoffs. Like, they're not world beaters, but what I will say for the Lakers, they've got a chance to really do some damage on the glass, offensive yes. rebounding wise. Jared Vanderbilt is known for that.
And it would have been a Grizzlies advantage if Adams were
with
healthy,
Adams. But. With Adams, exactly. So these are the reasons why this series has the potential to be really, really, really interesting. We're dealing with a handful of unknowns because of injuries and because of foul trouble. Can Jaren Jackson Jr. stay out of foul trouble? Can he extend his minutes without it being a problem? If he can, and you know he's a difference maker the way he usually is, then I don't see this being a problem for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
But it's a big if, and the playoffs are obviously different than the regular season. You know, even the idea of who you're missing specifically, look, no one would have picked the Grizzlies to win a championship without Ja, but they won plenty of games without him, and they also beat the crap out of the Warriors one game last year without him. They can right. they can still score without him. They can really defend without him. And, you know, the thing is, I don't think that's true of the bigs. Like, if their bigs are not there, particularly Jaren Jackson when Steven Adams is out, it's right. a totally different thing. So we'll have to see. And the Lakers can really make hay, I would think, with Jaren Jackson off the floor.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. In terms of the Lakers, you mentioned D'Angelo Russell being an issue for them defensively. And I agree, it's going to be fascinating to see how he holds up in this playoff series. Schroeder's been fantastic for him. I've always thought he was a good player for them, and it was kind of weird that one year he wasn't on the team. And I just remember from the last year he was in Oklahoma City when he was a sixth man candidate, you know, maybe he was never going to get that four-year, $84 million extension. But it is weird to me that I feel like he's such an undervalued player around the league. I think he plays really well for them both ways. I'm excited to see a Schroeder, Reeves, Vanderbilt, LeBron, and AD lineup in this series. I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, you mentioned it's not that the Lakers have great depth either. I bet we're going to see some LeBron, AD staggering in these early rounds, and LeBron maybe playing some of the backup center minutes just so Gabriel and
really
Mo Bamba are not out
because
there
you're
a
gonna,
ton.
You're going to be extending. Like, look, the other thing we can talk about foul trouble, even if it's not foul trouble. When you're talking about someone that plays 28 minutes a game in Jaren Jackson, extending him out to closer to 40 and asking him to run to the perimeter and having to chase and having to switch because you're going to play Bron at the five, like, good luck. You know, he's capable, but it's just not the situation you want, particularly, again, when you don't have your not even your backup big. This would be your starting big in Steven Adams. So it'll be fascinating to watch, man. Like, I picked them in six, the Grizzlies. I'm willing to stick with it, but it's could I be wrong? Absolutely, and I think it's part of the reason that people are so intrigued by this matchup.
I think I'm gonna probably pick Grizzlies in six. I'm with you. I think the big stress test for this series is gonna be. It sounds crazy, but I think it might be JJJ foul trouble and Dylan Brooks foul trouble because those guys are gonna need to play big minutes.
Yep. He's always historically, not always historically, he's historically struggled with that as well. And I think, to me, it's always been one of the reasons that when he wants to be brought up in all defensive team conversations, it's like they're kind of like, you know, two peas in a pod from a foul trouble standpoint, or they have been. Jaren Jackson's gotten better with it, but it's still an issue sometimes. Dylan Brooks has always been one of the most foulinest, you know, wing players in the league. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. I'm curious.
Let's go to... We got to go to Warriors-Kings next, I think, because I think that's probably the... That's the steak. That's the protein, as they'd say, in succession. I think that's probably the most exciting first-round series we have. People expect...
I thought you were about to say the most exciting episode of Succession, which also would have been true. But anyway, go ahead.
That was... Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, they're getting the primetime slot on ABC Saturday night, the Kings' first ABC game in 16 years. The offense, I think, projects to be off the charts in this series. I got to be honest. I think I'm going to pick the Warriors in five. I have a lot of faith in the Warriors in this series. Granted, I'm probably overvaluing Andrew Wiggins a little bit. We have to assume he's going to be on a minutes restriction or something of that sort, but... The playoff experience versus Steph Curry getting to manipulate the Kings defense, I think, is going to be too much for Sacramento. But I might just be a hater. I might just be low on Sacramento. I might just be projecting because I called the Sabonis-Halliburton trade a disaster. So, you know, I have my reasons. So, Chris, tell me how you're feeling about this series.
I don't think there's been a bigger... like flag carrier for the Kings this year than me, at least in the national media. Like I called it two weeks into the season. They started 0-4, and I think someone on the ESPN said somebody picked the Warriors in four, which was, you know, like on the one hand you can do the whole like, oh my god, like that's disrespectful. On the other hand, I mean, this is not a typical 3-6 matchup,
right?
They are within an hour of each other. It's a drive for the Warriors. So fundamentally, if you wanted to, you could kind of take the whole road record part out of it just because the Warriors are going to have a lot of support in the building. The same thing would have been true, by the way, if the Lakers had ended up being the sixth seed. So that part of it doesn't factor in as heavily for me. There's the aspect of... the fact that the Warriors obviously won the championship last year. So they literally have, like, they are polar opposites from that standpoint. It basically becomes a question of, do you think the Warriors can stop or slow down the Kings on defense? Can they stop them from scoring 150 a game, 140 a game? And I like their odds of doing that a little bit more than I do the Kings. That said, the Kings were very, very tough on the Warriors at times. They also, the Warriors won a game that they had no business winning because of a horrible call against, I think it was Herter on a play. It was very early in the season where Clay took a three.
Oh, I remember Mike Brown was upset. Yeah.
He was furious, and I think he had every right to be. So it's I'm fascinated to see it because I kind of feel like this is one of those where the Kings have, like, and I think they should feel this way, but, you know, they should feel like they are going to win this series. They were the better team all year. They were the beneficiary of the fact that there's a lot of parity throughout the league. They happen to win four or five more games than everybody else. But they're also a good team. They just really can't defend. This is a bad team to not be able to defend against. And a bad matchup from the standpoint of you don't really get to feel your way into this series, given how much experience the Warriors have. If Wiggins had been back and part of this rotation for the last 2 months, I think more people would be picking the series in five, the way that you said that you're tempted to. I think that there are enough aspects here that make it closer than that. I picked the Warriors in six. If it gets to a seven, I kind of trust that the Kings will win the series. Maybe that's silly to say since I'm picking the Warriors in six, but if the Warriors don't put their foot on the throat of this team, I think that they'll lose the series. I think that the Kings will, like, I think they would feel their way into the series if they had to, if they get a chance to. Let's say they fall behind 2-0, but then it becomes a 2-2 series. I think the Warriors are playing with fire at that point. So I'm going to pick the Warriors. I think that they have more balance on their roster from offense to defense. I'm not worried about their road record factoring in here because they're playing essentially at home.
Haven't they won a road game in a playoff series, like in 30 straight playoff series or whatever the crazy number is now?
They're gonna get at least one. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be in game one or two. I would expect that they will. I would also think that, like, yo, if this is still a championship team, if they're gonna make a real run at a championship, that they're gonna want to, like, punch the Kings in the mouth just to show, like, yo, you can gloat all you want to about being a three seed, about almost having 150 games. This is different territory, and they have an opportunity to show that right out of the gate. I'm so disappointed that I won't be in Sacramento for game one. Yeah. Just because that, you know, that atmosphere will be incredible. For sure. I was there earlier this season. It's awesome. So I really hope that the fans get a good show there in either game one or two. Just they deserve that. But I'm looking forward to a great series. I think that the teams, they're not evenly matched. Mm-hmm. But I also could easily be wrong about this one, too. Yeah. Like, I think the Kings will win if it goes to seven. I really do.
This is an interesting one, and I think the big stress test for Sacramento is going to be, what do we do with Sabonis on defense? Because Golden State, even though they're not... Golden State's funny, man. Because when push comes to shove, they will pick and roll you to death. It's like they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it, but the Houston Rockets learned the hard way. Some teams learn the hard way. It's like, oh, okay. You're making us take this one seriously? Here's one more Steph Dre pick and roll for y'all. You know, it's like the LeBron 2 chains. Here go one more for y'all.
Yeah, exactly. I knew what you were talking about. Yeah.
But I think Sabonis will have, you know, I think if the Warriors start Looney as they should. I love Kevon Looney, by the way. I think he's like my dream profile. I think he's like the... God, like, if you don't have a superstar center, like, if you don't have Jokic, Embiid, Bam, I guess Sabonis you'd put in, like, this, you know, tier. But, like, it's hard to have, a worse player than Kevon Looney. He's just so solid and dependable. Anyway, I think Sabonis would probably start the game on Looney. I think if the Warriors go small, so this is an interesting lineup that we only saw 8 minutes of in the regular season, that I assume is going to get some run in the playoffs. And it's Curry, Thompson, Dre, Wiggins, and Kuminga. I think that's kind of like the new death-ish, smallish lineup they're going to play. I think in that lineup, you can hide Sabonis on Kuminga. I think what's going to be interesting is to see how are the Warriors going to make Sabonis? I mean, obviously, it's like, you know, it's not as simple as, oh, they just put him on Kuminga and he's out of the play forever now. Kuminga will set screens, etc.
Right.
I just think the most interesting part of this series is Sabonis defensively, really, how the Warriors attack him and how the Kings try to hide him.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of things I'm really curious about. The Kings are so good at scoring too, that I think if they're able to score and they're able to set their defense, you would think it helps a lot. Also, shout out to, like, with them being as bad as they are on defense, I've pointed this out a number of times, the Kings basically have one of the best transition defenses in the league, despite the fact that they run up and down all game.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brown and I talked about that a lot when I was kind of profiling the team back in February and March. And he was like, that's very much by design. Like, we can't be bad at everything was kind of like the refrain. Like, we have to really dig in our heels at some point to make stops. And so if we are running a track meet sort of game, and we decide we're going to stand up and really try to defend and make that difficult to score, even in transition after we turn the ball over, it's sending a message that, like, you know, the buck stops here. It's kind of like the bend, don't break model on defense.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Steph bend and then break more defenses than anybody. So that's the challenge here. Sabonis has been a little bit better, I think, than he's given credit for defensively. Like,
let me put it this way. I'm not trying to crap on Sabonis and say that's just what the playoffs are. Like, that's what the Warriors are thinking.
They're gonna attack him like there's no tomorrow. And I think that there's ways to do it, especially with that much spacing. So they're gonna try to do that. I mean, what we've seen when you look at the film of it, what the Warriors are gonna try to do is disrupt those handoffs as much as they can, really stick to Kevin Huerter. I imagine they're going to do some of that to Keegan Murray as well. That, you know, you have to kind of disrupt that a little bit, because if you don't and you just give Sabonis all day to kind of pick you apart or all day to go at Looney or whoever else one-on-one, it's kind of what Sabonis would prefer.
Yeah.
And it's like giving Jokic or anybody else just a chance. That's a bit far to say that. But Jokic is the best big man passer in the league, and Sabonis is behind him. Like, he's the next best one. You can't give him all day to survey the floor or to basically lick his chops and get a bucket or go at even a good center like Looney. So there's going to be a lot of things at play here, like, as we mentioned with the other series as well. But I think that the Warriors, if their experience is still there, which why wouldn't it be? We haven't mentioned Gary Payton either. They should be okay here. They have more balance top to bottom. They have more experience in the situation. They're playing on the road, but not really.
And
they should be okay.
They just also have that aura. You know what I mean?
I feel like they still have it.
Yeah, I know it sounds silly, but you can see teams, like, there's just an added level of tension when you play the Warriors. Like, I joked about this when we did that podcast. I think, remember, the Wolves beat them, you know, late in the regular season. It was a great game, but it's almost more scary to have, like, a 4-point lead on the Warriors than to be 4 points behind, because you're waiting for that wave, you're waiting for that run, you're waiting for that punch, you're waiting for the crowd to go nuts. And I remember seeing it during the finals, like, there's just that thing that hasn't gone away yet, where it's like, oh, we just know Steph's gonna hit three big threes in a row and everyone's going to go nuts, and we're going to have played perfect defense on all those possessions, but there's nothing you can do when Clay hits a, you know, they're just the team that I think messes with teams the most. I'm excited to see Sabonis. This is going to sound absurd. I tweeted this years ago, but I was like, I can't wait to see Sabonis play in a high-stakes playoff game. I've always been a fan of his, and, you know, I wrote this little essay for the magazine that should be coming out in a couple weeks just about how, you know, what I love about the NBA playoffs is it's all about, like, who has the answers to the test, because teams are going to keep testing you. You know, Bam Adebayo, he had that crazy jump shot this year, that in the paint, non-restricted area jump shot. It's like him and Spo both said flat out, that was a response to how I was guarded in the playoffs. Brook Lopez, who, you know, had back surgery 2 years ago, told me,
yeah,
I'm working on my lateral quickness in the offseason. He's preparing for, like, that one time in a game seven, they're going to ask him to switch. That's something he works on in the summer. He's the best drop big in the NBA, but even he's prepared to switch. And it's just, that's what I love about the playoffs is it's, you know, you will spend all year, all summer preparing for these brief moments. And I'm excited to see a player like Sabonis get tested. I think it's great for players. It's how they grow. It's fun to watch them respond. I think I am taking the Warriors in this series, and I really think I might pick them in five. And that's not a disrespect to the Kings. It's just, gosh, the Warriors. Here's a trivia question for you, Chris Herring. When was the last time the Golden State Warriors lost a playoff series in which Steph, Klay, and Dre played every game?
The last time they did? And I feel like it's a trick question because I feel like one of them wasn't fully healthy for the year they won before they won the title. So you got to go back even before that, right?
I have it as 2014, so maybe you're right. But yes, the whole point is
2014 was that the year they won it, or was that the year before?
That was the year before they won. That was the year before their first title.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. Wow. Okay. So that there you go. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
So
they were 2016. All healthy that year. Yeah. 2016.
Okay, I was going to say even maybe before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
It's been a minute.
I'll believe they can be knocked out when I see it, you know?
Yeah, it's always easy. It's always really difficult to try to make that call. I feel like people, sometimes you kind of can see it. That first year after the Lakers won the title, like people were so reluctant to believe in the Suns. And I think, there is some of that with the Kings too, of like, it's been a minute since you've been in the playoffs. Why should we trust you? And sometimes it's really not that complicated. I think this one's far more complicated. Like the Suns one with the Lakers wasn't complicated because AD and LeBron had both been dealing with injuries. AD just got back. He wasn't even really right when he got back for the playoffs that year. This one is, you know, the biggest question mark he had was Wiggins. He's back. His was not an injury. It was just personal stuff.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about the fact that if this was – let's say this was Phoenix and the Warriors, not with the rosters. Let's say Phoenix had an equivalent roster to the Kings, but they just played in Phoenix. I would probably be more inclined to take Phoenix at that point because, again, the road aspect of it, it's really not easy to just look away from the Warriors' road record. It's so horrendous. But like you said, they have a track record of always getting at least one on the road. The experience that speaks to their experience and the fact that this is a drivable distance for them and their fans, by the way. I do get the impression the Kings will have a decided home court advantage, but if the Warriors get on a roll, they're going to need every one of those fans to really try to stymie them a little bit because I do really think the Warriors are going to come ready to play and maybe they won't, but that's what experience is supposed to teach you. With everything they've done and the fact that they're the defending champ, someone's going to have to knock them out. It would be a huge task for the Kings to do that.
I am excited for that series. One last note on it. I'm interested to see who on Golden State picks up the De'Aaron Fox matchup to start the game because that's a big ask for Wiggins. I think I'd guess it would be Klay. You know, I have to assume they're going to hide Steph. If they're putting Draymond on Sabonis, which again, that's going to invite a lot of cross matches if they start Looney, but does give Golden State an opportunity to switch a lot of those pistol actions that they love to run with Sabonis and Fox. I'm not saying Klay would Sabonis is strong. He's underratedly strong. I think that's a big part of his game. Not saying that's an easy matchup for Klay, but I think it's an option for Golden State. I'm interested to see how they defend those two guys. As much as we talk about Sabonis in space, him and Fox together have been fantastic. Let's go to, how about Knicks-Cavs next? This is going to be an interesting series. Have we gotten an update on Julius Randle that we're recording this Friday morning?
That's
something that looms over the series.
Massively.
Not cleared for contact, questionable for game one as of this morning.
So that alone kind of says to me, like, maybe just hope and expect that he'll be there for game two.
Yeah.
If he hasn't been cleared for contact,
that's not a great sign.
In my history of kind of covering the league and even predating when I covered the league, throwing guys back into play during the playoffs when they're not, I mean, obviously people go and they're not 100%, but not cleared for contact and then getting into that level of contact is a lot. So we'll see. I mean, it was a bad ankle roll for people that saw it. Not only could he not walk, but it looked like they were going to have to kind of come out and wheel him off or something. He stayed in to shoot his free throws and then, you know, immediately needed to come out, and it was bad. So it's big. Like, the Knicks have plenty of scoring. It's just different to have like a top level creator to do that. Brunson obviously can carry that load. He did it with Luka out last year. There's a big step down from that. You have Quickly to some extent that I think will be right in that conversation for Sixth Man of the Year. But after him and after Brunson, then it gets a little more dicey. I mean, Barrett has shot so poorly from deep for the last two months or so. You're talking about 20-25% from three. He becomes a massive X factor in this series for a number of reasons, not to mention that the Cavs, their wing position, like their kind of their three position, has been the biggest question, I think, for them all year as to who will step up and do that. They've been the number one defense in the league, so it's not like they haven't been able to hold their own without a consistent person in that spot. Mm-hmm. But I do think it becomes a bigger question if Barrett is playing well. How do you go about defending that? Do you take someone like a Mobley and try to defend that position with him? If Randall comes back and gets it going, how do you go about defending him? So there are a lot of questions in this series. As much as I think, and you wrote this at one point about the Knicks like looking like legitimate title contenders for a brief stretch there, not without Randall. And I think that goes without saying. I think we would all say that, even if you don't love Randall as a player. But also, this is going to be a really tough matchup for them, I think. I just think it will be.
Yes.
You know, even without looking at the fact that they don't have home court advantage, they don't have their number one scorer. This is going to be an uphill battle for them against a defense like that.
Yeah, you know, there was a moment where the Knicks defense had kind of upticked and I think looked legit. But then after the All-Star break, I think kind of came back down to earth. And, you know, we all have takes. I don't know that I'd walk it back necessarily, but more recent evidence would suggest that, you know, contender talk has cooled off significantly because of their defense, because of Randall being out. And you mentioned, even with Randall healthy, it's interesting about the Knicks. Like, they have a good offense. They score a lot. But it's not like they have this beautiful ball movement, you know, Warrior-style motion. And Brunson has been fantastic, but even Brunson is not like a Donovan Mitchell level pick and roll operator necessarily. Like, he's good, but he's not. He's great, but it's just a little bit surprising how good their offense has been to me. Because you mentioned Barrett hasn't been a great shooter. Grimes has been really, really good. They've had contributions. Quickly's been really good. I guess what I'm saying is it makes me a little bit nervous, especially because I feel like so much of their offense, it's like Randall creating a shot out of thin air. Mm-hmm. That would have been hard to do in this series against Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen. Brunson driving into the paint against those guys is going to be tough. I think even with Randall, this is going to be a really uphill climb for the Knicks. And I think if Randall misses a game or two, I think this is going to be a quick series for the Cavs. I think they've had success with LeVert now. I think a little bit more success with LeVert in that fifth spot. I mean, Isaac Okoro was against Miami. He hit like a big game-winning three down the stretch for the Cavs. That you can't overreact to literally one shot. But seeing him have the confidence to take it, those are the shots he's going to have to take in the playoffs. He finished at 36% from three this year, but I mean, those are all wide-open looks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the ones I would expect him to be getting in the playoffs, too.
Yeah.
You're going to dare him to make those. And I think the reason you almost want to dare him to make those is that if he doesn't, you would imagine that J.B. Bickerstaff might have a pretty tight leash. Like, you can let someone try to shoot through that in the regular season. You can't afford that in the playoffs. So, like, if it's not him, is Osman getting those looks? Is it, like you said, LeVert? Do they go further down? I wouldn't even say the depth chart. They've used five or six guys at that at that three spot. So there's a lot of different ways they could go with it. But you, if you're the Knicks, you should want Okoro to get those shots and hope that he misses them so that you can get a really good defender off the court. What I'll say, you know, to your point, absolutely. Like, any team would struggle, I think, a little bit to score at the rim against this club just because you've got essentially twin towers there. A couple of guys that are going to be all defensive team candidates. You know, Mobley will get plenty of support for defensive player of the year. Brunson did have 48, I think, the very next game against them after they lost Randle. So we've seen him
finds a way.
On a heater. He finds ways. A lot of it is ISO-based, which is what you want in the playoffs. Again, we saw him do this against a pretty good defensive club and against Rudy Gobert last year. So he's capable. It's going to be a really big test for some of the Knicks' young guys, even some of the ones that aren't young. I'm really curious to see what Grimes does in this series. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see whether they can get anything in transition at all, which would be a huge boost for them, given that Randle will miss probably at least game one, or even if he doesn't, like, he's not going to be 100%. Can you get points that aren't grinded out sort of plays, off of grinded out sort of plays? Or if you do, like, can you offensive rebound against this team? It's a team that defends really, really well, so you're going to probably have plenty of misses. Can you grab any of those misses and score off of them? Whether that's Hart, whether that's Mitchell Robinson, who I think had the highest offensive rebound rate in the league. Is it Hartenstein? You're going to have opportunities there, too, and you're going to have to make good on some of them because the scoring is not going to come easily in half court against this team. Yeah. It just isn't.
And I do wonder sometimes if we're underrating Cleveland a little bit. They have the second best net rating in the league in the regular season. Top 10 in both offense and defense. Like, we talk so much about how good their defense is, and rightfully so. I think Mobley is a great pick for Defensive Player of the Year. Him and Allen are fantastic together. Their offense has also been really good. And, like, Donovan Mitchell was has been as good of an acquisition, you know, as they'd hoped. Like, I think it's turned them into a legitimate title contender. Cleaning the glass, I mean, they won 51 games during the regular season. Expected win total was 55. Like, they underachieved a little bit. And that was with guys, you know, every team dealt with injuries. So I guess we could say in and out of the lineup for every team. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a way in which we're almost underrating them a tiny bit. As crazy as that sounds, like,
we don't
put them in the Milwaukee-Philly tier. But I think they've been just as good as those teams, at least statistically.
And, you know, it's one of those things where we talk about the Kings and whether they have experience. Cleveland, that's a big question for them, but they're also, there's always these situations where, like, there's nuance within it. If you're just talking about it black and white, Cleveland has no playoff experience. If you're looking at the reality of it, they have a guy that's gone off for 50 in the playoffs. So it's not like they don't have anybody and that they haven't had the stage. They were in the play-in last year and really were kind of bounced because they lost in the play-in, but weren't they the highest seeded team in the play-in last year?
And that team, you know, that team was good with Jared Allen, and Jared Allen was hurt. And they're probably a high seed with Jared Allen.
There's that. There's the fact that I'm pretty sure Mobley got hurt at the end of the year, which changed the Rookie of the Year conversation as well. And so he missed time toward the end of the year. Then Allen got hurt right before the play-in and was trying to play hurt. Cleveland, I mean, that doesn't change the fact that they have experience or don't have experience, but they would have been in the playoffs last year. They had the best net rating in the league for a good chunk of last year, or at least in the East for a good chunk of last year. So this is not coincidence. This is a good team. I mean, all the pieces kind of makes sense. And between them having home court advantage, between them having an elite defense, where you're not relying as much on whether the shots go in or not, your defense is solid game to game. It's a team that has had basically fewer blowout losses than any team in the league. I like them in the series. Like, I really like this Knicks team too. We mentioned this on a previous podcast with Mannix. Randall, you know, if we want to talk about experience, okay. So the Knicks have experience, but Randall shot like ass the last time they were in the playoffs. He was sub 30%. He was sub 29% in the playoffs last year, if I'm remembering correctly. Damn. So, or maybe it was 29.8 or whatever it was. It was less than 30% field goal percentage.
He was he's like one of those fridges at the, you know, like a hospital, and it's like you get a drink and it's like, we keep this at 32.1 degrees. That was Randall in the playoffs.
My man was freezing. So, it's not to say that that he's not capable of playing better. Like, it would be hard for him to play worse. This is just a even better defense than the one he played. Like, the Hawks were not
this defensive juggernaut. Yeah,
no, they weren't. And so if they were able to do that and scheme for that, and granted, against a much different roster, so that's the nuance within this. The Knicks have a better roster. They have more offense now. They've got a legitimate point guard who can score on his own. But I just don't think this is going to be an easy matchup for them. Obviously not if Randall isn't there. They're going to have to look for every nook and cranny they can to try to get easier points, to try to get to the line, because the points are going to be scarce and against a team like this, I would think.
I have a vested interest in the Cavaliers because the Boston media mafia's Michael Pina laughed at me before the season when I said they have a shot to make the conference finals. So I'm high. I'm high on my Cleveland Cavaliers, Chris.
He didn't take you seriously when you said they had a chance to do that?
No, he didn't, dude.
That's so weird.
I know.
That's so weird just because, like, Mitchell alone kind of, I think, reinforced the idea that, like, they've got two all-star guards. They've got two all-NBA defensive team, like, caliber, if not defense player of the year, caliber centers, bigs. They're, like, look, if you want to quibble about their bench, I think that's fair. Their bench is not chopped liver.
Yeah.
Like, they've got guys between Ricky Rubio, like, LeVert plays with the bench and kind of platoons with the bench anyway. They've got Osmond. Like, they're not bad. Yeah. They were good enough to be able to let Kevin Love walk, basically. Mm-hmm. They're not a bad bench. It's not a bad team. Like, I would be a little surprised if they knocked out somebody in the second round. I would not be flabbergasted by it. Like, they're the best defense in the league and have been a top five, top 10 team in the league for the last 2 years. They just didn't make the playoffs because of injury stuff last year, period.
Some people are just born haters, Chris. Let's touch on, I guess, I think 76ers and Nets is the last series here that has any real intrigue with apologies. I guess, no, we haven't even talked about Clippers Suns yet.
All right, I was about to say that I don't agree with that. And I would also say this. Maybe this sounds wild. Uh-oh. Maybe it's just me not. Well, actually, you know what? I take it back. I keep forgetting Jaden McDaniels isn't going to be playing. I was going to say, if the Wolves somehow come out of tonight and play the Nuggets, they have enough talent to, like, scare the Nuggets if they're not on the job. But, again, without Jaden McDaniels, I don't quite buy it. I think that they would probably need, like, if it was Naz Reid and Jaden McDaniels and the full complement of the Wolves, like,
it'd be a good series.
I'd probably need to take an edible, but, like, you could probably talk me into the Wolves winning that series if they had everybody. The fact that they don't, probably not, but we'll see. But anyway, why don't we talk? Do you want to talk about the Sixers? I would rather talk
about Clippers Suns. I slipped my mind that we hadn't talked about them yet. Yeah. Granted, the lack of Paul George is a real bummer here. And, you know, he's podcast P now. I don't know if he's. Let's see if we get the latest update on Paul George. When you Google Paul George, the first thing that comes up is Paul George says NFL players can't play in the NBA. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that's weird.
So we're not a lot of injury news, not a lot of injury update out there on Paul George right now. Needless to say, I don't think he's really expected back soon to start this series. The Clippers gave an update yesterday. Still undergoing exercises and therapies to rehabilitate his sprained knee. No timetable for his return. So, doesn't feel like his return is imminent. I think that gives... I mean, if you had a healthy Paul George, you'd have, you know, I think the team most capable of defending the Suns. You put Paul George and Kawhi on Booker and KD, and you have a shot. I mean, I still think they'll have a good chance defensively between Batum and Kawhi. They can take turns on KD and Booker. Westbrook's been fantastic for the Clippers, but that almost makes me nervous for what he may do in the playoffs. Maybe he can keep it going, but what's your feeling on this series going in?
I think similar to what you said. It's a little. I mean, we've seen the Clippers win series before without both of their stars. Well, not without both, but without one of their stars.
Right.
You know, in some cases, some people would say like without the more important star, the one that's more accomplished. Certainly, they've won a series without him being fully healthy. This one's tougher, and I understand the idea that the Suns are new, that you know that they haven't really been tested, even in the 8 games that they won. All 8, by the way, they're 8-0 with Kevin Durant. Most of those teams have not been good or playing at full strength. They beat the Nuggets twice, and one was without 4 Nugget starters, one was without 5 Nugget starters. The Suns were using everybody because they're still trying to kind of get everybody to gel with Kevin Durant. Just watching the Suns on film, though, there's just so much to their offense, in my opinion. Watching the weak side action and watching Kevin Durant play so far off the ball and the kind of mental conundrum that it throws at defenses, the idea of can a weak side defender pinch in and try to take away that pick and roll when Ayton rolls to the basket off a Chris Paul pick and roll, or does he have to stay attached to Kevin Durant? And we've watched them try it both ways. Defenses try it both ways. And Durant, I think I saw some crazy statistic about the idea that Durant in like 5 or 6 games with the Suns had as many weak side, or not even weak side, but just like corner threes as he had like all season with Brooklyn. Nuts. Because he's just getting so many open looks by playing with Booker and playing with Paul and guys having to pinch in and take away Ayton at the rim. It's a basketball utopia, basically, offensively, and they're good on defense, too. I don't think that we've quite seen the challenges or the struggles the way we were expecting statistically with Mikal Bridges being out of the mix. And Cam Johnson, by the way, is not a bad defender either. So maybe it turns into a depth question. But again, and you and I have talked about this before, the Suns' depth is not bad. And again, you're extending these guys' minutes. So it still is more of an injury depth question for me with the Suns. But look, Kawhi is going to be fascinating to watch in this series. It'll be interesting to see how often we get to see the Kawhi-KD matchup.
I have to imagine Batum is going to take a lion's share of the minutes there. Because they're going to need Kawhi offensively. And Kawhi...
I know.
I'm sure in the fourth quarters, he'll step up when needed. And, you know, he showed... Even he showed in those Mavs series against Luka, when push comes to shove, he'll say F it and go two-way monster mode and be like, I'm not switching.
He did it a couple years ago with Giannis when they went to the title and won. I mean, now granted, that's also a long time ago.
Yeah. You just can't expect him to do it all game. Yeah.
He won't. He won't. KD won't go do it the other way often. It might be here and there, but I'm so looking forward to seeing it. I mean, a couple of guys that we have not always been able to count on them being healthy at all. And so when we see it, it's amazing to watch. Two of the best players in the world. But all that said, I mean, we barely mentioned Devin Booker, and he was one of the biggest beneficiaries of this, if not the biggest, because you – basically, anybody that you'd want to throw a second guy at, you kind of
Phoenix. You mentioned the weak side action. I mean, they'll still run. It's not quite like a full-on ISO, but you know, Booker has the ball kind of right elbow, right wing, and you can't send a help defender. You can't plant someone in the lane. Ayton is such a effective rim roller that as frustrating as he is, like you said, you have to respect him rolling hard to the rim. And if there's one thing he will do, it's roll hard. Chris Paul is going to get so many open catch and shoot threes during the playoffs. Man, I think if Paul George were healthy, this would be a real toss up because I love the Clippers' depth. I think they have the wing defenders to throw at Phoenix. I think Russ could wear Chris down a little bit. You know, if Russ is playing like 24 minutes a game, but he's full court pricing, he's pushing the pace. Like, I think he could wear Chris down a little bit. But I mean, they've had a good starting lineup even without Paul George. I think it's been, Morris has been hurt as well. So they've had Westbrook, Gordon, Batum, Kawhi, Zubac, 17.2 net rating in 83 minutes. I have a hard time seeing the Clippers doing anything here without Paul George. And that's with Kawhi having played. The thing is, as good as Kawhi's been, like, Kevin Durant's been that good or better this season when healthy. And then you add Devin Booker and Chris Paul into the mix. Yeah. I have a hard time seeing it for the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. With Russ, what's always been so interesting to me is the idea of, in the postseason, teams just dare the guy to shoot.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And back off of him like he smells bad. And, look, man, Russ can't quite take the bait. He's got to take some of those shots, but if they're not falling, it can't turn into something where, you know, you're playing the song on repeat, essentially. You have to attack. You've got to try to make plays for other people. And frankly, like you said, if he's matched up against Chris Paul, I mean, there aren't that many guys that Russ can always say he still has so much more athleticism then, because he's getting a little bit older. It's not, you know, the explosiveness is not always there in abundance the way it was. Chris Paul is one of those guys he can say that about, hands down.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook has been able to say that for a long, long time about Chris Paul. So he's got to be able to attack and make some hay with that. You just don't want to see him shoot them out of a game if he just isn't, if the shots aren't falling. So you have less room for error here without Paul George.
Yeah.
I also would think that as good as the Clippers can be on defense at times, this is a team that has the potential to light you up if you're not positioned properly. Yeah. So Russ, like I would say, even more so than Russ having to play well on offense, he's got to be in the mix defensively.
He can't just be wandering. He needs to study Jose Alvarado tape and be like, I'm playing like this defensively against Chris Paul. I'm getting in his shirt. I'm getting in his jersey. You mentioned he cannot have those off-ball defensive lapses against this team. I will say, we talk about it every year with the Clippers. Interested to see if and when they go small in this series, because as good as Ayton is, they're never going to throw him the ball in the post. Every possession that ends with the Ayton post shot, especially when Paul, Booker, and Durant are on the floor, is a win for the Clippers. I think this is going to be an opportunity for them. One way you can kind of, granted, you're not going to win these matchups, but if you at least don't want to give up open shots, the Clippers could theoretically try to play this team one-on-one and switch everything. It's not going to be easy. The floor is going to be spaced. But you are going to have a guy, whether it's Torrey Craig or a Kogi, that you're cheating off of at all times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could theoretically, if you are looking to mitigate some of Russ's off-ball stuff, you let him hide/roam on whoever that fifth player is. That will be interesting. It's just a bummer. I hate when you just chalk up a series to injury, but
I mean, but that's a pretty major one against a star-studded opponent. You know, so I hear you. I did talk to Torrey Craig last week about the idea of, like, look, man, you got to shoot in this series. Okogie, the same thing is true of him. And I think I asked him something along the lines of, like, is that something that Monty Williams even has to tell you? He's like, man, come on. Like, we know what it is. Like, you look at the roster. You look up and down the roster of who you're playing with. You know what it is. Like, you know. Yeah. Even as much as you have confidence in yourself, you know that you're ultimately going to be the guy that they play off of, and you know you're going to have those opportunities. You know you can't shy away from them. So, I mean, that is going to, on some level, be the story of the playoffs, I think, too, is that in this era where teams have tried to load up two and three guys on each team, you're naturally going to have one or two guys on every team, whether it's Okoro, whether it's mm-hmm. Craig and Okogie, whether it is PJ Tucker. You're going to ultimately have guys in just about every game that just, like, it's a question of whether they shoot. And even if they do, can they make them? Can you force somebody to start guarding you? Last year we watched it with the Mavs. It was Josh Green at times. And, mm-hmm. and like, that was the irony of the Mavs not making the playoffs. It was like, he got a lot better this season because he was just like, yo, when you talk about the summer work the guys have to put in, they just have to be willing to shoot. They have to get over the mental hurdle of, what if I miss? You just have to shoot. So it's going to be a story in at least three or four of these series, easily.
You may have just inspired my next feature pitch. It's actually a great idea. I might be stealing Damn. That one. Yeah, sorry.
Actually, buddy. You know what, man? I'm looking at our story whip and how many things we got on the docket, you can have it. happy birthday. Merry Thank Christmas.
let's go to Nets Sixers quickly. I think this... Look, obviously Philly's heavily favored in this one. Brooklyn, you never know what you're going to get from this team. Like, sometimes they look like world beaters. I saw them play the Hawks in Brooklyn a couple weeks ago, and they storm back and have this amazing offensive explosion. Mikal Bridges, 41 points. Another thing that was really funny was I was talking to Chris Paul, and I was like, yeah, you know, some guys really hate it when you do that rip through. But I'm watching, you know, the other night, and Mikal Bridges does it. And Chris Paul's like, yeah, man, these guys all do it. He's like, they all get on me for it. He's like, they all do it. And I don't know. I think that the Nets could make this series a little interesting.
There's potential for them to do that. I mean, I was ready to pencil in my Sixers in five prediction and ultimately did do that, to be honest with you. I just think that really what it comes down to is the idea that Embiid is so much better than anything on the other side of the roster. I tend to think that it's next to impossible most of the time, unless you found, like, think about it. The Warriors, that one year they won their first title, it was because Draymond fit so well within their small ball scheme. They were able to use mm-hmm. him. And they didn't have to rely as much on David Lee. But generally speaking, I think it's rare for a team to have so much money tied up in a player that isn't used or isn't utilized the way you expected. And that's kind of what Brooklyn has with Simmons. So with that in mind, you know, the Nets have games where they look great. Mikal Bridges has been better offensively than I think anybody could have expected. I voted him third on my most improved player list this year. You know, Cam Johnson is a really good fit for them. The Nets still have a really crazy amount of shooting on their roster. Mm-hmm. So crazier things have happened. Wilder things have happened. I just think the inevitability of Joel Embiid at some point is going to kind of dictate things. I would imagine that the Sixers have enough to get this done between Harden. And Harden, you know, I think this is a good opportunity for him to try to regain himself a little bit. He looked a step slow, which I feel like is kind of a common theme for him mm-hmm. at the end of seasons now. Does he have enough gas to kind of finish out the season, to close out the season? He had moments where he didn't play all that well or look all that great mm-hmm. and wasn't great at getting to the basket and finishing at the basket. I think this first round is like kind of a good chance to kind of rectify some of that. But either way, I think Embiid, like if Embiid had to do it himself, I think he could get this done for them. You know, the Nets were a little bit up and down. Like, I think we expected them to just be a crazy good defensive team after that trade.
They've been pretty good. I mean,
they've been pretty good, but they had moments. And I will say, to your point, they were more at the beginning of that stretch right after the trade where they were consistently giving up like 130. I think they had a game in there where they gave up 140. They pulled it together more by the end of the season, but also by the end of the season was a stretch where you had a lot of teams that weren't really going for wins. And so I think that the numbers there, I won't say they're misleading, but there were moments where I'm like, why can't the Nets defend better? But between Claxton, Mikal Bridges, you know, they have
Finney Smith. No, you're right. I mean, they were like,
so we'll see.
I, I think ultimately they were 13th or 14th in defense post All-Star break, had a negative net rating, went under 500. I'm with you. I think Philly wins the series. I'm probably picking them in five as well. There will be a lot of Sixers fans in Brooklyn too. That's also a pretty short trip.
There will be.
For their fans. Yeah,
there absolutely will be.
Yeah, I do think at least they'll have options. It's funny. Claxton is so good on defense, but the best way to negate him is, I mean, not everyone has this, but you have someone like Embiid. So it's not like Claxton is helping or, you know, coming off his guy to block shots, etc. It's like, no, he's going to have to guard Embiid in the post. He's going to be involved in these Harden Embiid pick and rolls. I do think they'll be able to switch them if they put someone like Finney Smith on Harden. They can switch a little bit. They have, I think, the length and athleticism to help and recover on switches, but I'm with you. I just think Embiid is going to overwhelm in this one.
In the Nets, I will say, man, I mean, they have a lot of, when we talk about some of these other low seeds, they've got a lot of playoff experience, maybe not together.
True.
But they also, I think what's weird about this matchup and the reason that you said, and I'll probably go in five, you know, maybe it could be more interesting than that, is that they actually have, like, the bodies that, like, they should be capable with those three guys, Finney Smith, Mikal Bridges, Claxton. You've got enough guys that are capable defensively that can make it difficult. Claxton, I think deservedly so, will get some all defensive team votes. I don't quite think he'll get defensive player of the year votes, maybe from some people. But the fact that we have to talk about that, they didn't have a whole lot of games together. They didn't play a lot of meaningful games with where other teams were playing all their best guys, where they played well. But, like, wilder things have happened where teams kind of figure it out. Jacques Vaughn got, you know, the last coach of the year vote for me. I think I said that when we hung out at lunch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wouldn't be stunned if they take it to six. I'd be a little surprised if they take it to seven. But wilder things have happened. The Sixers have one of the more underperforming, as of the last few years, stars in the league in Harden come postseason time. And Embiid is not necessarily the most sturdy player as far as holding up physically. The last postseason was an example of that. So we'll see. Like, it wouldn't be – wilder things have happened. I'll put it that way. But I still have the Sixers in five.
The Nets also do have a not totally dissimilar vibe to what the Raptors had last year, which is like small forwards and vibes, you know, but they do have Claxton. I will say I'm interested to see – what the Sixers do with P.J. Tucker in the series, because I love P.J. Tucker. But if I'm the Nets, like, I'm considering putting Bridges on P.J., quote-unquote, and letting him roam and wreak havoc defensively. And you let P.J. Tucker shoot all the threes he wants in this series, because, again, I'd rather that option than Embiid in the mid-range. Or, I mean, again, the Sixers have done a really good job this year. That's credit to Embiid and Doc. Embiid is so dominant at the elbow that it becomes so much more difficult to send a help defender at him. But I'm just seeing if the Nets can do anything there and moving forward in the playoffs, you know, how teams are dealing with P.J. Tucker, how the Sixers are dealing with him. But they've done a really good job of getting Embiid out of those, you know, really uncomfortable doubles that he has, I think, a harder time with in the post and at the elbow. I guess now we can go to Hawks Celtics. I mean, the Celtics are winning this one.
I mean, I feel the same way. I will say, I think that series has the potential to be a little bit more interesting than Sixers Nets.
Really?
If only because of the fact, not that I trust them, but I mean, when we talk about experience, they have that. When we talk about just like, can they cause issues in one way or another? I think they potentially could. The Hawks have been the highest scoring team in the league, I think, over the last 15 games, basically since they hired Quinn Snyder. Mm-hmm. They're going to score a lot. They do certain things. And I was at the game the other night in Miami where the Hawks knocked off the Heat to earn the 7th seed. How many offensive rebounds did the Hawks have? 22? We know that they can be physical at times. They have a guy that if he gets hot – can cause you real problems. And like on some level, while you can always defend a little bit better, Trey can also just pull up from 35. So it's like, it's not, look, I trust the Celtics here. I think that they probably have the two best players in the series, but it's not like it's the chasm between Brown, Trae Young, and DeJounte Murray. Like, those are pretty good players. Those are all-star level players. Those are, in the right year, those are all NBA level players. So it, again, I don't expect it. Do they have a roster of guys that, like, if something really unforeseen were to happen that could change the complexion of the series? Absolutely they do. I would be stunned, but, I think it could happen. I'll put it that way. I have the Celtics in six, just to be very, very transparent. But the Hawks have a ton of offense. They've shown a capability at times to play some defense. They have a good coach against a first-time coach. Like, let's just be like, this is one of the biggest questions we have against about the Celtics is the fact that they have a first-time coach.
Chris, I mean, you're talking dirty to me right now with the way you're casting doubt on the Celtics. I'd love nothing more than to enjoy their downfall with you.
I don't think it will happen,
but I mean, I just think they're gonna run Trey roughshod during the series. I just don't think the Hawks are gonna be able to keep up with them anywhere close defensively. The Celtics,
they're not a consistent enough team to get it done.
Yes, and I feel like the Celtics, you know, people are like, oh, they had this midseason swoon. They're not as good as they were at the beginning of the season. Still the only team in the NBA top five offensively and defensively. I don't think they're going to have any trouble. I know the entire Boston media mafia apparatus is just going hog wild over the Hawks beating the Heat in the play-in game. And I'm seeing all the Heat culture's dead. Heat got to blow. I see it. You know, I get it. They're all very thrilled. Like, the Hawks are not good. They're average. What's the stat? They've been within one game of 500 for like the last 30 games.
Yeah, I was sharing that with someone the other day. Yeah.
Like, I know everyone in Boston especially has got, you know, their chowder cups full over this Heat loss and how thrilling it was for them.
Chowder cups, you know, bro. Not their chowder cups. Come on, G.
Everyone's chowder bowl is full the morning after a Heat loss in Boston, and I know they're so thrilled about it. They're so satisfied, and everyone is freaking out over a one game where one team got a crazy number of offensive rebounds. But I'm just... The Hawks have been average, and Boston has been great. I think I'm picking the Celtics in five. I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. Listen, we've been excited. We could talk about this probably for another hour. We don't need to do that. Let's just get a couple minutes, though, in real quick on the one seeds. I think Milwaukee... I'm at the point where I think the Heat should really consider... I mean, I'm not saying they should throw the game, but I think it's in the... I think it's in Chicago's and Miami's best interest to lose this game tonight because Milwaukee's going to smoke either of these clowns.
You're not going to get a debate from me on that. I made my, like, probably nothing I've said on this pod is all that controversial. Maybe the one we were just talking about would have been. But even then, it's more just like if an injury happens, like it wouldn't be the most craziest outcome. The Nuggets, I said, if they get the Wolves, that maybe there's an interesting point or two in the series, just because the Nuggets looked like trash for a lot of the end of the season and everything. but the Bucks, on the other hand, like,
I'm picking the Bucks in a sweep, sure. No matter who they play.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what it would require for them to lose this series. I will say this. I mean, the Heat were conference finalists last year, but I just got done saying how with the Nets, how when you've kind of got a throwaway salary, and by that I mean like you're paying big money to someone that isn't playing for you or isn't effective for you, how rare it is to even compete for a championship. That's kind of the Duncan Robinson effect of the Heat. I mean, I was just watching them the other night up close. It's just asking too much. The Heat don't have that much athleticism.
I can't believe you didn't tell me you were going to the game, dude.
Yeah. I went to the game, brought the fiance to the game.
Couldn't throw up the bat signal for Roe Baby? Couldn't be like, hey, man,
actually, I told you I was coming to Miami, but it was my fault that I didn't follow up. But also, the weather here has been trash. The weather's been highly trash for anyone that was thinking about visiting. I might not even be able to get out of here because of Fort Lauderdale's airport being flooded.
Hey, man, but you can come crash with the Nodkernies. That's no problem.
Hey, that would be fun. Low-key, that would actually be very fun at some point.
We'll grill it up.
But no, I mean, the Heat just don't have the athleticism.
No, they
the
don't.
Bulls,
if you watch...
The Bulls, unless you have DeAr DeRozan, like, shouting for the rest of the series.
Dude, DeAr versus Giannis. I want to see that. I want to see DeAr
versus Giannis might become a bad free throw shooter again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but honestly, though, no, I don't see... Even if the Bucks were playing without Giannis, I think the Bucks would win the series against the Bulls. It would make things interesting against the Heat, I think, if Giannis were for some reason not able to play. But I'm with you on that. I just think it's a highly unlikely that we see anybody knock out the Bucks in the first round.
If you watched Milwaukee play Miami with Giannis this year, the Bucks are just controlling every shot that's happening on both ends of the floor, and it just comes down to Miami, a bad mid-range team, trying to hit a bunch of mid-range jumpers. It's not fun to watch.
So we'll see. I don't know. It's a weird year. Like, the parity this year around the league, you knew it meant that we were going to have some good teams, some great teams, but not that great, which is kind of what this year turned into, like a bunch of teams between like 55, 56 wins, and then a couple with 50, and that was it. And then there was everybody else. But the teams that were so mediocre. Like, and I feel like the teams that we saw in the play-in, I'm not going to fault Oklahoma City. They're young. I'm not going to fault New Orleans because they're playing without Zion. But Atlanta, Chicago, Miami, Toronto were so mid all year. Despite having some talent or some star power, they were just so mediocre. It's like I can't really take seriously the idea of any of those teams winning a series, to be real with you. Just because, I mean, like, even the Wolves, I'll give them a reprieve on this because they were without Towns. They were trying to get these guys to gel. Maybe they were trying to get these guys to like each other based on what we saw at the Rudy Gobert thing. But I have some grace on that. But the other teams that were, you know, should have been better, each of those teams, they were just so average, and it felt like from one game to the next, they were constantly toying with 500. So I don't expect much of them if they do even make it to, you know, play the Bucks or what have you, whether it's Miami or Chicago.
I will say I hope we get Nuggets-Wolves in the first round because I want to see the Nuggets versus Gobert in the Jamal Joker pick and roll again. And it's a little bit of a revenge series. Tim Connelly, now the president of the Wolves, trading for Rudy Gobert after leaving the Nuggets. So I do hope we get
that one. I hope Walker Kessler sits courtside for the series. I hope he does. I hope he does.
That would be so
just
funny.
Torment the hell out of them.
And you know who? It's funny because I think he would never do that. He's one of the nicest, most just affable people I've ever interviewed.
I know.
But that would be very funny. I don't think Walker Kessler has a mean-spirited bone in his body, but that would be hilarious if he showed up courtside. Chris, that will do it for this jam-packed playoff preview episode. This just got me so excited all over again. I'm even willing to forgive you for coming to Florida and ignoring me and my family and my dog.
Next time, hopefully there'll be more opportunity to get out. So, like, I stayed tucked in this
dude,
hotel room.
At least
for, like,
you were. At least you're above water, man. Truly, it's been scary down here.
Seriously.
Shout out to the owner of Fat Boy Sushi who saved my old editor Matt Dollinger's parents. Just gave them a ride. Like, he had a pickup truck. They were stranded at the airport.
What?
Yeah, it's a crazy story. It's a crazy story.
Wow.
That will do it for today's episode, though. Chris, I'm excited to talk to you on the other end of this weekend when the NBA playoffs will officially be underway. Until then, everyone, please enjoy the start of the postseason.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.